Shop Maniacs. Yeah, listen to another episode of the Shop Talk Show podcast, all about front end web design and development. I'm Dave Rubin. With me is Chris Coyer. Chris, how are you?
Very good. You're not listening to this podcast at 120%. You're just listening to it at a regular 100%.
Yeah, just a regular 100%. But we talk fast now, and so now everyone talks fast, and now we're very smart. We sound a lot smarter. Have you ever noticed that, how people sound smarter when they talk at 2x, and you think, and then you hear them at 1x, and you're like, man, this person's a stupid because they talk so slow. That's like my whole life. Anyway, I listen to so many podcasts at 2x, and I think it's that thing like where British people sound smarter because they have an accent. People sound smarter at 2x because they it sounds like they're forming thoughts a lot faster. I don't know.
I can see that. I can see that. Yeah. I just think sometimes it's not only accents, but they use different words, like, you know, people that speak any different language or from another culture or whatever use like slightly different words for things. And you're like, oh, that's how insightful of them to use that slightly different way of describing this thing. It's just because it's unfamiliar, it makes you sound smart, I guess. Or maybe that's a charitable way to do it. I'm sure some people are like, you talk wrong.
Well, you're like, oh, he called it brilliant and not awesome. Anyway, I listened. So I have this podcast I do with Jan Wang and Zach Meyer called The Side Quest. It's all about video games, cross promotional episode here. But what's funny is it's just us talking about video games, and it's like, for me, it's good, but like it's so at 1x. But when I pump it up to 2x, I'm like, I love this podcast. It's just like me. I'm just like, I love it at 2x, you know. But when I'm listening at 1x, I'm like, man, we talk slow, don't we? But then you go to 2x, and it's like, oh, this is like a podcast I'd listen to because I listen to all my other podcasts at 2x. So
you might it transfers to real life a little bit too, right? Like if you can't listen to a conference talk live at 2x, but you know, after the fact you could. And as a speaker, you know, you might choose to change your cadence on purpose. Like if you have a lot of material to get through in a short amount of time, maybe you gave the talk once in a 45-minute slot and you got asked to do it and you're like, I'm gonna recycle that talk and do it in a 30-minute slot. You might pull a few slides and or just talk faster.
Yeah, I did the new era of conferencing. Have you done a conference talk here in the Corona times?
I did one 2 days ago at the WordPress Growth Summit. Yeah, just not much though.
No, yeah, not much for me either. But conferences I've kind of been asked to speak at, a lot of them are doing pre-recorded talks. So you have to record your talk before. And I thought, oh, I know what I'll do. I'll just record every segment of my talk and then stitch it up later. And that was smart, except for like the time of day, like the sun would set on me, you know? So it's morning in one portion, midnight in the next one. It wasn't working out very well for me. And so I was like, okay, I have to do this all in one go. But splitting it up like that actually helped me. Like, I was like, oh, this first section's like 8 minutes long and I don't even talk about it. You know, like it was really like, okay, it really helped me, like, I guess, I don't know, find checkpoints of how fast I needed to be. It sort of helped me like in practicing, but I don't know. I'm just kind of
cool. It was a, I could see like if you're, I don't know, stitching two photographs together, that the sun setting would be a problem, but it doesn't seem like it would be a big problem in a recorded talk. It's almost kind of funny, isn't it? Like if you change shirts or whatever.
Yeah, just like, and by the way, it's nighttime now. But no, it was interesting. And I recorded a little like video window, like myself, put like superimposed myself using OBS or whatever on top of like my slides, and then I'm like fancy. Midway, like I'm recording it and I'm like, oh no, I have to redo all my slides because my dumb face is covering up the slides. So I had to like redo the slide deck and kind of make it more like, you know, I guess askew, like weighted to the side my face wasn't on. So it was interesting learning that the giving talks in these times it's definitely different. And I think also, YouTubers have an advantage because, and Twitch streamers, because they already have all this technology sorted out. So
yeah, Speaking of, yeah, that's cool that you do it with OBS. It's extra super powerful. There's like a newish app that was going around that got a bunch of notoriety. I think it may be Mac only, but it's called which is it's a questionable name, but hey, it's memorable. So I kind of like it. But it's like OBS super, super light. So you get this little canvas, yeah, and you can drop your camera onto it, and then have this row of files below, which are, you know, whatever, PDFs or screenshots. I don't know if Keynote works, but stuff. And then you can kind of position yourself and have these little basic options for how you want yourself to look. You know, you can green screen yourself or put yourself in a circle and drag it around. But what's notable about it is that I think, like OBS, you just click one little button and it says on air, which turns itself into a camera input. So when you're in it, like a Zoom call, I can pick that camera instead of my, you know, the normal camera that I use. I say Zoom, but on my app, on my computer, it doesn't work in Zoom. It just doesn't show up as a camera source. But on anything else, it does, like a Google Hangout or I use one of those conference software things, you know, where you don't even remember the name of it. It's just some browser tab that you need to have open all day that day because that's the thing they use for the conference. In there, it worked great. So I kind of suspected Zoom being a little security conscious. They don't just allow any old app to be a video source or something. I don't know.
Right. I wonder what that reasoning is. I mean, I could see how like something
could just be my computer's, you know, weird,
installs a fake camera or whatever that pretends to be a camera, but it's really just an always on thing. I don't know.
Hey, that's a thought though. You know, it's not something to be taken lightly what your camera source is, you know, necessarily. So anyway, what was your talk on? You just gave this talk.
I was going to ask you the same question. So I'm talking about backlogs, which is awesome. Right? Everyone loves backlogs, and I think it's wonderful. The idea was, so the whole story, hopefully I'll put this talk online at some point, but the whole kind of background was one day I was working, and then like my email notifications started going off, and I quickly realized I was being assigned 313 accessibility issues, like in one day, and it was just like, oh boy, what do I do here? For this. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of like shocking to my system. It was like fight or flight. And then it just made me, it reminded me of like a literal log jam, you know, like, I don't know if you've seen one of those before.
Oh, I have. It's kind of a town. We used to have mills downtown in Bend here. The river goes through. So there's photos all over this town of literal log jams that happened in Bend, Oregon. Yeah.
Right. And I, you know, I've been reading a bunch of business books and stuff like that. And they all kind of relate to this. But the problem with the logjam is you chuck a bunch of inventory into a river, into the machine. The river's a machine. You chuck a bunch of inventory into the pipeline, and then you have a constraint, whether it's like a sandbar, a bend in the river, which I bet you have in Bend, Oregon. I don't know, but a bend in the river, a rock, any kind of bottleneck, you know, and then the logs just get jammed up and they're stuck there, like, and they bounce on each other and lock into each other and stuff like that. And what's, and I think about that in like a product sense, like you have 313 issues in the backlog and they go down the river, the pipeline, and then one thing slows down. Boom, like traffic, right? Like you just have a whole backup and the whole machine is locked and everyone's mad. And so that's kind of it. And so it was just kind of about like, how do you get out of a jam like that? Is sort of the talk.
Well, how about one little tip?
Oh, for me?
Yeah. Avoiding a log jam, you know?
You know, the conventional was, you know, it's sort of a, how do you eat the elephant, you know, question. Like how, there's a big problem. How do you eat an elephant? And conventional wisdom's like one bite at a time, right?
Yeah, sure.
But for me, I've never eaten an elephant before. I would like to know the most delicious parts first. you know, is there an easy to eat piece of the elephant I could maybe get started with?
I'd start with the eyeballs, maybe.
Yeah, maybe does an elephant have bacon? I would like to know this before I get started. I mean, But it's sort of like trying to figure out the good parts or like the easy parts that could maybe help you go.
Sure. Yeah. Prioritize that backlog to either find the juiciest parts or the easiest parts. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're hitting issues like, you look at 300 issues in Jira, like in a column, like in the to-do column, the backlog column of Jira, that doesn't help you. And you have to like click into each one. We found it easier, like just dump it into a spreadsheet, but then you're in a spreadsheet and that's a boring suck. And so, and even in a spreadsheet, you can only do like one column at a time, right? So you may know where I'm going with this. So I said, I popped it over to my buddy Notion and I went over to Notion.
You made a board? Dumped
all the issues into there. I made a board, like a whole Notion board. And so it's just a table, but then like you can categorize and, you know, the issues we were having was like, oh, you know, like alt text is missing. It's like, well, what page is that on? Because that matters incredibly. If it's on the like about page, it doesn't matter. If it's on the like production database checkout page, like that super matters, you know? So it was like, okay, let's just add the pages to this column. And then we're like, you know, we don't even develop on page by page basis. We do component by component, you know? So let's like map these issues, these problems to components.
Cool.
And that helped too. And so like we started surfacing that information in Notion, and then like, you know, the WCAG violation or success criteria is what they call it, 'cause they want to be positive, you know, but you know, what's wrong in the general sense, like not alt text is missing, but like it's a non-text content issue. And anyway, once you have these like multi-select fields in Notion, you can then like spit out Kanbans based on that, you know, and like, you know, you think of Kanban, like move the card from left to right, but really it's just a group by a certain tag, right?
Exactly. So, yeah.
So we could group. And so now we could like visualize these, problems in multi dimensions. Like you can just like say, like, okay, I'm going to look at it from a, this way or from.
Yeah, that's the power of Notion, isn't it? That you can just switch between those views with no effort.
Yeah. And you know, you can maybe like tune your Jira to do this for you. And that's cool. Yeah. If like you can do it. I did not have access to that. I didn't, you know, that's 8 months of my life to add one field to Jira at this company, you know? So it was easier to like pop this out and kind of manage the whole project in Notion. And so the whole talk's just kind of about that, how we did that, how we were successful. Like I think we got through about half of them in about 2 months, but that's like better than like the 2 years I thought it was going to be.
Oh, so. Yeah, that's impressive. You know, we just, I'm looking at a tab right now in my browser window. We switched. We are for a long time. We are GitLab at CodePen, and we have just kind of decided to switch back to GitHub for various reasons. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe we'll do a whole podcast on this at some point. But just, you know, GitHub's so good. You know, like visually.
Well, there was a time where GitLab was a competitive, like had some advances, right?
Absolutely, so. They did. Their CI is super good at GitLab, but we did self-hosted and we're reevaluating that. Anyway, whatever. We're back in GitHub. GitHub has actions now, which are freaking cool, which is kind of like CI also, but a little more broad. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's irrelevant to what I was just going to say is that, you know, there's issue boards on GitHub that are pretty good, you know, lots of good features in there. You know, I opened an issue on the wrong repo just the other day, and there's it was like one click to go transfer issue to the correct repo. I was like, whoa, that's nice, thank you.
Yeah.
But then there's this thing called projects, which is their like Kanban thing in GitHub. I think it's not tremendously old. I don't know, a year or two.
No, a year or two.
But yeah, it's Kanban-y too. Like you, that's, you know, you, I like that you use Notion because Notion has those views that are so powerful and cool. But there's a reason people use GitHub issues. Like even if it wasn't as good as it is, the fact that they're next to your code is a big deal. So one thing, it's just the software that you're already using. So it's just attached because it's in there. But it's really actually attached. Like you can make a pull request that references an issue that says that it closes it. And when then the pull request is merged, it closes the issue too. And, you know, it's deeply tied together, which is great. But these projects are issues too. Like a project board can be your issues. So it's just a different way. You know, I think most people are used to going to GitHub to look at their issue board and they just see this list. The one at the top is just the one that was opened last, you know? But the project board, you can arrange them. So we've done that when we moved our issues over and just made two. Marie did this. I just happened to notice it. I was like, this is a good idea. So you can have a bunch of tags. You could have a high priority tag or something, but then it's still on you to like choose to look at the high priority tag. But with projects, you can make the high priority tag a column. And it's the first one you see. Mm-hmm. So it's natural when you come here to look that the high priority tags are the ones that are right in your face, which is great. You know,
I love this, like making tools work for you. I love GitHub issues. I mean, it just works very well for me. And that projects, what I really want is there's a discussions feature. Have you seen that before? It's only available on open source projects, I think.
I mean, I actually have not seen what the UI looks like. I heard that it was existing and I know that there's like some weirdness because like they bought Spectrum and that was supposed to be that, but that didn't really pan out. And then they bought some other thing that was discussion related that didn't go anywhere. And it's like, it does make sense that on an open source project in particular, that there's slightly more real-time-ish conversation happening that aren't issues. They're just chat.
Yeah, and so I was on one, Alpine.js. I was having problems with that this week, but I was on theirs.
Mm-hmm. They have this feature.
They have the feature, and it's really handy to have like discussions attached to
chat. It's forums.
Repo.
Right.
Forums, basically. Like, but you know, like I was also on Netlify CMS this week, but I had to go like the Netlify forums to do Netlify, you know, like, you know, I think like it's a great way to be like, is this a problem? Like, do we, you know, like, or is, you know, I just think like having discussion, I really want it for like internal projects too, because so much of like product development is like chatting about stuff. Like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we had a blah, blah, blah? Like, that would be much better in a discussion than in like an issue where it's like, okay, now that idea that somebody had is forever a part of the backlog, you know, like that's just, again, back to my backlog talk, like, you know, polluting the backlog or putting too much inventory in the river can really jam things up. So you really want it to be like this, just kind of streamlined set of problems. And I'm looking at Alpine, they have 18 issues, you know, and
that's good for Alpine. That seems 30, low, doesn't it?
And like 60 unwanted or unanswered discussions, and that's okay too. But like, you know, like that, see, it seems like it's pulling issues out of issues, you know, it's not people like, hey, I can't get this to work.
I've done that, you know, I don't know, a dozen times in the last year, probably, but popped onto some repo and said, this is not an issue, so please feel free to close it or triage it otherwise. That's like the first sentence I write, but I'm trying to do X and I don't understand it. So is it a missing feature? Is it something I don't understand? But it's the only way I can find to talk to somebody, talk to the community around that thing, whether it's the owner of the repo or just somebody who's highly involved somehow or whatever. It seems like issues was the way to do that. And so this is very smart.
I can't wait. I mean, I just need it everywhere. Yeah.
So, I wonder if they'll go with chat. Chat seems more dangerous somehow. It just seems like if chat room on internet, bad in a way. If it's open.
Yeah.
If it's open. You know, I know we talked about Discord. Just what a week.
Discord's great. I joined...
And that is
chat. The 11D Discord this week.
Oh, really? 11. I want to go on the 11D Discord. That's fun. But, you know, I'm in some game ones now. And I'd say overall, like at first, I first popped in there, I was like, this community is great. Everyone's so nice and stuff. I was asking simple questions and stuff. And then the more I'm around and like in channels and like, you know, seeing the after hours chat and stuff, I'm like, nope, bad. It's just
live chat's bad.
And sometimes it's actual misbehavior stuff. And sometimes it's just like this channel is just basic GIFs, just people just gifing each other just just constantly, and they're not even funny, you know. I'm like over the gif thing. I would ban it from freaking my chats if I could, you know. Nobody's Ethan. Ethan's funny. He set the bar really high.
Well, you gotta, it's an art form that not everyone's mastered, but it is like, I don't know. It's like, take it to random or something, you know, unless it's, or on topic or something. I don't know. A lot of my chats too, it's like, I'm like dying for like political channels. Hey, take that over to political. I was trying to have a good day, but anyway. But yeah, it's a different world out there.
I posted something I was working on some, one of these Discord channels the other day, and it was like a little like, look at how far I've gotten on this little particular thing. And they're like, and somebody posted, that looks like some Apple bullshit to me. And I was like,
oh, good.
Well, it's an Electron app, so I guess it technically runs on your system too. But you know, thanks for the feedback.
What do you want?
Yeah.
$1 billion company. Like it's a good company.
But like, so then my mind goes crazy. Like, okay, who is this person and what is their life like? Like, are they in chronic pain? Because sometimes I'm in chronic pain and that doesn't make me like a good person that day. Like, I don't actually have chronic pain, but my back's been hurting for weeks. And I'm like, not at my best, you know? But I don't choose to take it out on chat rooms, you know? Like, that's not like the place. It doesn't feel like a good place to like, oh, my back hurts. I'm going to go. So that's probably not it, but maybe that's it. But what else? Or do they get some joy from it? Like, if you just stomp on somebody else a little bit, is it the same little dopamine hit you get from like, completing four rows in Tetris? Is that what's happening? Or what is it?
Yeah, maybe that's it.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. Just like, I zinged him. I zinged him with my zinger.
Must feels good, doesn't it? Get a little zinger.
I told him Intel was bad. Got him. You know? Yeah.
I mean, I just brushed it off, but I was like, if this happens more, and the irony was, it's kind of like a paid Discord, this particular one. It was like a Patreon one where everybody in there is paying this other person literal money to just, one of the benefits is just to be in there to like ask questions and stuff. It's like if Zach decided to say, you can be in the 11D Discord, but only if you support 11D on Patreon for $5 a month or something, which you could totally do, right? Which we might do. I'm not going to let any old riffraff into the Shop Talk channel. You got to contribute $1 a month to get in there, which we don't have yet. But
$1 to get into there.
Even if you charge $1, I bet the behavior doubles in quality.
I bet. Well, and that's what's interesting is like, I think you almost like, I don't know, communities, man, not like, I guess HOAs aren't the best invention in the world, but just the like, the we're bought into this community, like, you know, and I try to think of like ways to do that. You could have like contributions, like a GitHub based, you know, that's a person's a contributor and therefore that's what they get. But yeah, you almost like, I just, there's like, how do you show or prove or vet that somebody is bought into the, community? And so, yeah, I don't know. It's tough. I wish I had a better, I don't know. I wish I had a better answer, but money seems like one way to make that happen. So, but also like mod tiers, like mods can set the behavior standards, you know, like, and there's a subtle thing too, where it's like, if somebody's like really trolly or whatever, it's like, you bump them down a tier and you just say, sorry, dude, you're too negative. Like you go down, like you're in the, like you now have limited access because you're just rude to people, you know? And like that can maybe have like a better conversation, you know?
Yeah. Like, do you think that I've never thought of it. I'm always so absolutist. I need to like adjust my thinking a little bit, but you know, when somebody's rude or like, especially more than once kind of thing, if I was the owner of the particular community, my temptation is you're gone. Bye. And I literally do that on CodePen. Like if you just make some tasteless crap, I just delete your entire account and everything you've ever built. This isn't Twitter. I don't have to like, there's not, it's not like some mystery behind it. Who deleted my account? I did. Chris Coyer did, the owner of this website. I deleted you because I don't like your crap. You did some, and it's not because I woke up on the wrong. This is all codified. It's in our code of conduct. Yeah. It's in our terms of use. It's in our privacy policy. If you do something that breaks that, there's these documents that lay it out. So it has to break something in there. But you know, but you're gone. And but it's an interesting concept to think. Well, that's pretty extreme, right? But to be honest, I don't do it to people that didn't deserve it. I mean, that's just my opinion or whatever. Yeah, but in a chat room, it's like it's a little. You know, can you just knock them down a peg as like a lesson? Does that work, or do you get even more salty if that happens to you? You know,
they might, you know, but they might also be like, this sucks. I'm getting shadow banned. I'm out. You know, it's like, okay, cool. You solved my problem.
That's true. You've proved to them that there's consequences for it. So if you do it again, then you're super out, you know?
Yeah. You can't post GIFs anymore after you post a boobies GIF or something, you know, it's like, sorry, we just didn't, that's not something we do.
Yeah. Like, it feels very adult to do the, like to stop before like an outright rejection from the community, you know, like a hand slap and having like a tiered system of hand slaps. It seems like a way to go for.
Yeah. Just like, whatever, here's what happens if this, then that, basically, if you do this sort of behavior, if you're just rude, like, cool, you're like down a peg. And then if it happens again, like, we can't take you down a peg. So you're out of the channel. Mm-hmm. Like, you're just, you know, like, that's kind of it, you know, might be a good sort of thing. And then there was like, you know, you could even have, what I like about Discord is you can have like different rooms have different access, you know? So not like, again, I don't think like a cast system is necessarily the best system, but like or especially when you pay for it, but like, you know, you could like, hey, all these people pay $5 a month. Like, let's give them an area that they can chat about stuff, you know, with other people who pay $5 a month. That's sort of like a country club model. Again, I kind of hate it, but like in terms of like self-policing a community, it might kind of work, you know? So.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you in part by Netlify. You know them, netlify.com, the web hostest with the mostest for all your Jamstack sites. You know, sites that are hosted on a global CDN, so you pre-build as much of it as you can because it's just going to arrive to users smoking fast, and then do your logic somewhere else, you know? Don't hit a PHP file. Come on, you can do better than that. Oh, just kidding. It's just it's an architecture that I happen to really like and I think is kind of the future. And, you know, a lot of people have bought into it. You know how many? Well, at least a million, because they've been celebrating their 1 million developer and business milestone. Let me see where my spot in line is here. I'm sure it's not that impressive, but it's kind of cool. Lovely site here built by Sarah Drasner and friends. Which just goes through a bunch of like milestones for Netlify, which is super rad. I have to authorize the application here. It's going to tell me which place in the 1 million developers I am. When did I first put a Netlify site out? I'm number 125,143. So in the top, you know, in the top 20% there. Not bad. I'm pretty proud of that. It would have been nice to like break that sub 1,000 level, but I'm not that cool. Anyway, Netlify is a great host. They have tons of great features. Just because you're hosting a static site doesn't mean that it's just like literally only static. Of course, JavaScript can take over and do anything, and they'll help you do that a bunch. You know, one of the obvious things is just like, well, how do I process my forms then? Well, there's lots of services that can do that, including Netlify themselves. So the easiest way to handle it is just to put the Netlify attribute on your form, and then Netlify just kind of like takes it over and will process it for you and save the data and allow integrations and all that stuff. So it's pretty rad. Thanks, Netlify. Bye bye. I like it. This is all fascinating stuff to think about. You know, the last time backlogs were in, I don't know, large public discourse, I think was, you know, because every word that the Basecamp people say is becomes a thing. I applaud them for it. They're very good at stirring up just the right to getting people talking. It's quite the skill they have in that way. But the, you know, it was their thing was just throw away your backlog. You know, remember that? I can't remember the post.
#NoBacklogs.
Yeah. And I think it resonated with people because it was accompanied by this concept that, like, you're not gonna forget. Like, you're not, there's not, what, it's not like you're going to wake up this morning without your backlog and be like, I have no idea what to do to improve this project. Just nothing. I accidentally deleted my backlog. So I don't even know what key to press on my keyboard now. No way. You know, it's top of mind. You know exactly what to do next. You're going to do that thing that's obviously super important to do, and then you're going to do it. And I kind of like that because the negative part of having this huge backlog is that you're way down by it. You look at it and you're just like, oh my, we're never going to get to this stuff. My God, look at all these hopes and dreams we have codified on this huge list. We're useless people. We'll never get there. That sucks. That's a negative feeling that you don't need in your life. You need to just get up and get some work done. So why don't you delete that backlog and get to it? That was the implication, you know. How true that all is, I'm sure is more nuanced than that, you know.
Yeah, I bring it up in my talk because, you know, again, like if you have too many logs in the river, you're like, I'm sure you're just like, hey, we're not going to do that again, James. Like, don't put too many logs in the river. Like, we only take on what we can actually get down the river. And that makes total sense. You know, I think it's a very smart thing for. But you know, a lot of people can't do that. You know, like, I can't roll into whatever Microsoft's backlog and just delete it. You know, I would get some emails, some terse emails or something, you know? And so in with my situation with the accessibility stuff, it was like, we had a backlog. Yeah. I can't just be like, sorry, I don't believe in backlogs. You know, it's like, somebody put that in there. I have to deal with it. Like, but the idea of getting there, I think, is very interesting. Like, how can you get to that point where you're not just like beholden to a backlog? You know, how can you get through your backlog? And actually, I'm having this problem. Can I bring it back to myself, talk about myself for a bit more? So I finished this talk, right? Finished the talk. Yay, it's done. Now I have free time. Right. And like in my evenings and afternoons, and I'm like, oh man, what am I going to do? And I have this list of side projects in Notion. I have 35 different side projects in Notion, and these, it's a lot.
35.
And these are just ideas.
Yeah. Little
35.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot. And these aren't blog posts. These are like, I should write an app to measure my back spine alignment with the moon phases or whatever.
Yeah, I got two podcasts here, a talk, a VS Code theme I want to write, a little static site I want to do, based on like my grandpa's POW memoir, whatever. That's what I want to do. Another app, a conspiracy theory app, neglected GitHub projects, stuff like that. Video games, dozens of video games. Ideas. And so and I'm just sitting there like, oh no, I just finished this talk on backlogs. I have a backlog of side projects. You know, my whole life is just a backlog for whatever reason. My brain chemistry is just like, hey, let's do stuff. Like, let's come up with an idea, you know? And I've been going through this and like trying to like whatever organize my personal life backlog, which is so dumb. But, you know, I just have these ideas in my brain or projects, you know, ones like building my shed and to work from or whatever. Like, but like, you know, these are just dumb ideas, but I like want to do them for what I feel compelled to do them. And so I went through and I made a effort impact matrix. Have you ever done that before?
Tell me about this effort to impact. I like it. So low effort, high impact is the goal, right?
Low effort, high impact, right? So like, and I actually labeled Shop Talk as low effort, high impact, just in terms of like,
I agree
like
with that.
We have it down, right? Like, and we pay Chris Enns and Tina to do a lot of the work. on like the production work, but like, so for me, this is like a pretty, like, I have this figured out. It's low effort to do. Same with the side quests. Like, we have a system. And then, you know, impact is probably high just because I get a lot out of it. It's something to talk about each week. And it actually, like, informs, like conversations I have at work and stuff like that. It's like, oh, I just talked about that or with an expert or something like that. So anyway, I feel like it's a high impact activity for me, you know, and that's hard to gauge that, but like, that's how I feel. But anyway, so I have low effort, high impact, and it can be low, medium, or high on each of those. And then like, I found a formula and but I put it in here and it creates a priority matrix based on that. So if it's low effort, high impact, it's a one. And that means do that thing.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. If it's low effort, medium impact, that's a two. That means do that thing next. If it's low effort, low impact, that's a three, or high effort, high impact, that's a three.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird, but those extremes happen. And then there's a four and a five level. So high effort, low impact, like, what's a good example? Like, I think that Arduino thing we talked about with Suze Hinton, like where I like have a Bluetooth receipt printer that prints me a ticket every time I get assigned a ticket in GitHub.
Like, high effort, low impact.
It's a high. Yeah, it could maybe.
Sure.
It could be maybe medium effort, but like, it's a lot of effort. Like, I'd have to like, whatever, beef up my Arduino chops or whatever. But like, you know, that's probably not the first thing I should do in my list. So
anyway. That's true. And this is just, it's just a framework, right? You could wake up some Saturday morning where, I don't know, the family's at the pool or something and your mind is really fresh and you're just like, I'm actually going to do that Arduino thing because I just freaking want to right now.
No, yeah. And that's it too. It's like, you can like also just do it, you know, but there's maybe like some, like I also started a status, like, so I have Kanban statuses now, which is terrible, but, so I have prototyped is like the first level. Like, I have built a prototype for this. Like, I thought about it enough. I built a prototype for it. In progress is something like, okay, I'm actually like noodling on this activity. Released is like, it's out. I want to change that a bit because like Shop Talk's released, but Shop Talk's like an ongoing thing. So I have an ongoing, tab. And then I have needs attention as a status too. And so that's like, you know,
interesting. Yeah.
That's like, oh, hey, I need to like actually maintain this. So that's kind of maybe, it could factor in. I can maybe make that factor into the priority matrix to some degree, you know, but, and then stalled, like, yeah, like projects that are just like, for whatever reason, blocked or stalled out, you know? And then I created a Deadpool too. And I've really enjoyed chucking stuff in the Deadpool, because it's this balance of like having that idea written down. It'd be awesome if it was in a discussions format, having an idea written down and having an idea like worked on, you know, and like, so it's good to have like the idea logged and maybe even like in some column, but you know, you don't have to look at it every time. And again, Notion is great for this because I can just hide all the Deadpool stuff like from my like regular view and just know it exists.
You know, it's interesting. Somebody, I don't know, this is like a thing between Andy Bell and I, we're just fascinated by the fact that Notion has this API. They don't actually have it, but they talk about it regularly. And he's like always on the prowl for little times when they mention it, even just a little bit, you know, because it's like, are they actually going to do it? Because it's like so obviously that they should, you know.
They should. I saw somebody like, I looked at a repo this week and it was like, oh, I'm using the Notion API. And I'm like, the Notion, you want that? like how?
They don't just actually have an API. They have ways that you can scrape it and there's third party things and people have done clever things. None of that appeals to me. In fact, it anti-appeals to me. Like, I am not going to use some thing that's not official. That, you know, I'm just not an unofficial API using kind of guy.
Yeah. I need a V1.
Yeah.
But I would love, like, with this like backlog, multi-dimensional backlog thing I've been doing, I would love to like not import a CSV. I would love to have like a stream from Jira or something, like a JSON that makes a table from Jira, like straight up. Like that would be cool because I could like just extend Jira inside Notion and I wouldn't have to like basically make my
extend
own
extend it exactly. The API just would keep it in sync. Maybe you'd treat Notion as read-only, but you just use it for its organizational abilities where the source of truth is still Jira because it has to be because that's where the rest of the company does stuff or whatever. That could be yeah. possible, or it could be the other way around. You know, you could manage all your issues in Notion and have it just sync over to GitHub because that needs to be public or something. It'd be really cool if it was a two-way street. You could update them either place, but that seems like when has that ever worked? You know,
right.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you by Framer. That's framer.com/shoptalk. Go there, sign up for free, get 20% off any paid plan. That's very generous. Thank you, Framer. When you've spent hours designing something beautiful for the web, the last thing you want to hear is, oh, sorry, we can't build this. You know, what you need is a tool that bridges the gap between design and development. Framer can be that bridge. It's a browser-based prototyping tool that enables designers to use code-backed components and dynamic transitions to visually express ideas. So when the time comes that, you know, you perhaps as the designer are giving it to a developer, the developer can jump in and easily inspect the elements, get the CSS or the JSX right from there. Custom animations, custom built with Magic Motion. It's powered by Framer Motion, which is an open source library that's awesome. You should check out for React. It all comes with a complete clean code, which can be taken right from Framer and you can move it right into production. So it's the gap. It's the Framer is the bridge. So sign up for free or get 20% off any paid plan by visiting framer.com/shoptalk. That's framer.com/shoptalk.
Anyway, that's cool. So that was fun stuff to talk about. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I guess we've been talking about it a long time, but I'm definitely in this, like, I don't know. I have free time and I want to apply it on something, you know? Right. And I'm trying to make the best decision, but I realize, oh, I have too much stuff in my, I have too much junk, too many farts in my engine. So I need to just,
can you, like, Marie Kondo it? Can it just there's 35. Does every one of those ideas bring you joy? Or do you look at some of them and you're like, meh?
Oh my gosh. I need a joy column. And I'm going to add a joy column. But no, I think that's it. I think I need to, like, Marie Kondo some of this stuff. And you know,
I mean, maybe, but I think Marie Kondo would, I don't know. I actually don't know that much about Marie Kondo. I've not read the book or seen the show or anything. I just know the popular culture references to it. But I suspect that it's not like then bury it deeper in your closet, Dave. I think the idea is literally delete it so that it stops, like, occupying mental space.
Yeah, delete it, and if it comes back, like do it.
Yeah,
you know, don't even worry about it. And so I could probably,
if you love this open source idea, delete it. If it comes back to you, you love it.
You know, and that's definitely in my brain. Like, I'm like, I there's too much. I'm 40 friggin' years old, man. I'm not gonna, like, make 12 video games in the next year and a half.
I know, those thoughts creep in, don't they? It's like, you got kind of one big swing in you, you know, on some things. Like, you don't get to have to, like, you have to make these big decisions. Like, where am I going to work? What am I going to do? What's the impact I'm hoping to have? Because I don't get to do it four times, maybe twice, you know? The greats do it four times, you know. But me, I'm going to get one probably, you know. So I'm going to make sure that the thing I do matters.
Well, I remember when I was 20 or so, I you know, I was kind of like still like hoping I'd be in a band that, like, toured and everything and was super cool or what, you know, like a blog buzz band, you know? But I remember I just was like, you know, I'm going to do computers instead of try to be in a band, you know? And it was like a heart, like, crushing decision, you know, to, like, give up that goal. And what's weird is like my wife was in a band, like she was actually very successful in music from my point of view. And yeah. I just was like, you know, I'm going to just not pursue this. And it actually paid off for me. Like, I think like I was able to apply myself at code and become a better coder because I kind of gave up this dream. And the message here is not give up on your dreams, but just kind of like it was like, you know, what do I need to do now? What do I need to focus on now? You know, and I think that helped me. So
that made me think of, we're going to have, I hope, and this is usually bad practice on a podcast, is to talk about a future podcast you're going to do, because unless you've already recorded it, there's a decent chance it just doesn't happen, you know? But it probably will, because this is a reliable dude. David Dylan Thomas, we've met him, you've met him, right? We met him right in your hometown of Austin. Yeah,
Artifact.
Super interesting guy. Has a new book out called Design for Cognitive Bias, which is I have not read yet, but is on the way. And should be cool. It's such an interesting topic. Sometimes these things are a little wish-washy to me, but the cognitive bias one is fascinating to me. It's these little phenomena that influence how you think in ways that you might not even be aware of, you know? Like, you're thinking back on your own career and how you made this choice and how you think it was the right choice now, but you don't really know. You probably are remembering that through with a little bit of rose-colored glasses, like things worked out. So yeah, even that one, it has a name, you know. But what I didn't know this about, and I feel bad because it's been a couple of years now, he's a great podcaster, has a cognitive bias podcast, and they tend to be, especially the early ones, are like 8 minutes, 6 minutes, 7 minutes, where he's just like, here's one of the cognitive biases. Yes. I'm going to just explain it to you in really clear terms what it is and why it's important to know about. And then that's it. And it's great little bite-sized pieces of this stuff. So I'm so glad he's got a book out. And God willing, Dave, we'll have him on the show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's very, he has a great podcast. And there's also another one, You Are Not So Smart, which is like an hour long episode usually, but like it's in that same vein. And I love those, just kind of like, hey, here's the thing your brain does. Like, good luck. Like, good luck in life, because your brain is kind of working against you. It's working for you, but it's also like working against you in a lot of things.
Yeah. So now this is making me think of that article that was going around the other day, Tech Brain. Did that come across your radar? I'm going to post it to you because it's really great. It has this, Dave and I are in this Slack too, where just this morning, it tends to be like high action in the morning and then everybody falls off, wouldn't you say? Isn't that weird? But this particular morning, the conversation got going about tech Twitter and the cheesy motivational stuff that's all over it sometimes, you know, some of these, these silly tweets that just are meaningless, but somehow are pervasive. And we are just making fun of them, essentially, because that's what we do sometimes, you know?
Like, empower your heart with JavaScript or something. Right, yeah, right. It's like those motivationally.
But sometimes coder, really, really smart, successful, you know, rich, famous, whatever people do the same crap. And there's this article called Tech Brain that calls out one of these tweets in particular. I have to paste this in for you. I have to just stop what I'm doing because it's so important. It's so funny. It ends up being a Nat Friedman quote that somebody was quoting on Twitter, but this is the tweet is, pessimists sound smart, optimists make money. And that's supposed to just be like,
dang,
that's just the way it is, you know? And the article's about like how that the reductionism of that and how that's it, that there's something about tech that kind of like brings out this, like, there must be a Boolean answer to this, you know, complicated life phenomena. So I have deducted it to be this. Anyway, the article is very, very funny.
I'll read it in my wheelhouse. there's a lot of like, you know, I don't know. I don't want people to die because of an AI's decision, you know, or something. That's like my pessimistic view or whatever, but it's like, you know, but an optimist is like, oh, look how amazing, like, life is going to be with this new AI, GPT-3 or whatever, you know? And it's just like, oh boy. I had that experience the other day. Like, you know, GPT or GTP?
The only reason I even know about it is because I saw some like poll that was like, what are you most excited about in tech? Serverless, GPT-3, or, you know, something else, you know?
Yeah. The demos are really cool. Like you can like type out, you know, like make me a page with a button that says click me and it.
Who wrote that code then? Did you just have to input that sentence and it worked? Or did somebody write some very complicated code to make
that? Yeah. I type that sentence and then an AI figures it out and stitches some React components together and spits it out. Like they've taught a computer how to write React basically.
Oh, okay. So the React demos I've been seeing aren't because this thing can do anything. It can find an elephant on the plains of Mojave or whatever. It doesn't do that. It writes React components. That's what it does.
It could. Yeah. And like, and then there's like somebody did it in like Figma, you know, like they're
okay.
Like,
so it is more generically intelligent. You can have it do all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. You like, you get an output from your input. And then there's even like, you could just like type, you know, you know, oxygen is, and it'll just like write a Wikipedia article based on oxygen, you know, sort of like basically it'll auto complete or auto infer what you want from something. And then somebody showed a demo where you just type like two Muslims walked, and then the way it auto completed was like into a church with bombs and blew it up. And you're like, whoa, 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 no. Like,
yeah.
That's not okay. Like I, and you understand where it got that source input. Data, you know?
Yeah.
But like, again, that like AI cannot be doing that. Like AI cannot be like exuding like a like racial bias or a I guess xenophobic bias, you know? Like, so like we really like have to watch what it's doing anyway. So again,
reminds me of that algorithms book that we never ended up getting the author on. She's a little too famous for Shop Talk Show, I think. But Math Not Bombs or whatever kind of.
Weapons of Math Destruction.
Yes, that's the one. Because she yes, that's it. And which is a great book, but talks about how that system is. When you get that output of two Muslims walking into a church with a bomb, you need to technologically slap its wrist or inform it that that's not the kind of output that you're looking for. And then it needs to be able to learn from that. You know, the system needs to be correcting. It needs to be correctable. It can't just be just like, well, the thing spit it out. So that's the truth. Those are two different situations, you know, and she always brought up, I always liked like the Amazon one. The Amazon algorithms try to sell you products that are related to other products. It's an algorithm that does that, but it has all the right motivations. Like you might not like that because you're like, ugh, computer's telling me what to buy, but it's correcting in a big way. They're highly motivated to not show you things that you're not interested in. So it has this like correcting quality to it. Cause if it's not working, it's not doing the job that they want it to do, then they fix it to do the job that you want it to do. That's actually a good system. And the dangerous ones are the systems where it's like, well, the machine told me you're a bad teacher, so you're a bad teacher and you're fired. There's no feedback loop. There's nothing to say like, wait, that teacher was a good teacher. Why can't it be this system be corrected? What the hell?
Or like, you're going to jail longer because you're more likely to go to jail. So it's like, wait, what? Like the computer?
Demolition Man?
But... then I also heard, not like counterpoint, I read Malcolm Gladwell's new book, Talking to Strangers, and he actually kind of spins it more positive, like sentencing is actually more fair when a judge is, like, because judges have inherent bias and stuff like that. Anyway, it's, again, can of worms, what's the truth? I don't know. So again, I'm going to choose to be pessimist, not just like fully optimistic about it, because I don't know, I value a little bit of humanity. I want that to be preserved, but that's just me. So Hey, oh, we probably need to wrap this up. We're getting a little theoretical. We'll do questions on the next one. We'll have questions or a guest or something next Shop Talk Show. Does that sound good, Chris?
Yeah, that sounds good. That sounds good. We were even going to talk about web workers, but we'll just have to wet your beak and we'll talk. Nah, let's not. We'll do it next time. Just to everybody, get yourself in that mental
place. We may have another correction to issue. Not a correction, an addendum would be more concise. But we're never wrong here on the Shop Talk Show. It'll be a first that we'd have to ever correct or extend some sort of previous comment. So we'll figure that out. But thank you, dear listener, for downloading this in your podcatcher choice. Be sure to star, heart, favorite up. That's how people find out about the show. Follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show. Tens of tweets a month. Have your Shop Talk Show. .com/jobs and get a brand new one because people want to hire people like you, even in this economy. So stay safe out there. And Chris, you got anything else you'd like to say?
ShopTalkShow.com.